This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was one of the four deputy governors of Illinois, Dan Hynes. Dan oversees issues involving the state's budget and economy for Governor Pritzker's administration. Most recently, Dan Hynes worked as a senior executive at UBS Asset Management in Chicago. That followed a distinguished 12-year career in public service as the comptroller for the state of Illinois. Hynes was elected comptroller in 1998, reelected in 2002 and 2006. In 2011, President Barack Obama named Dan Hynes the U.S. Observer to the International Fund for Ireland. He's a graduate of St. Ignatius High School, Loyola University School of Law, and a Bachelor of Arts in Economics from Notre Dame University. Deputy Governor Hynes addressed his comments to the fiscal mess, the stabilization of pension system in the state of Illinois. He said in 2010, the state faced a challenging state financial situation. But between 2015 and 19, the difficult situation became extraordinarily difficult. For fiscal year 20, Illinois is $15 billion in debt. We've had 8 credit downgrades. Universities like Southern, Eastern, and Western have been reduced to junk status. He talked about Governor Pritzker's budget address that will occur next week. He said that Governor Pritzker will address many issues, but most importantly, the question of pensions. Currently, Illinois is $134 billion in debt in its pension system. Pensions eat up 20% of the Illinois budget. He blamed our current predicament on poor political judgments, both from Republicans and Democrats. The system we have now is simply unsustainable and unfair. Pensions are an unbreakable promise, and the state will have to honor them. But, he said, there are some solutions that the governor will propose. Number one, a dedicated revenue source for pensions that will be $200 million over and above what is legally required. An asset transfer, moving certain assets into the pension system. Deputy Governor Hynes said that one of the proposals for dealing with the pension mess will be for improved financial management, that certain bonds will be issued only for reducing the pension funds, not for any operating costs.
Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you all for being here. And yes, Jay, it was at this very podium that I gave a speech 10 years ago almost. It was January of 2010 that I gave my last speech at the City Club, probably my last speech ever, quite honestly. A lot of you were probably here. In fact, I know Lawrence was here and Jack Lavin, a lot of people. You guys got to get a life, honestly, if you're still here. I've done some things over the last 8 years. I don't know what you guys have done. But I actually thought about that speech and found it in the archives of my home computer and took a look at it just to see what I had said then. And of course, the old saying, like, some things never change. It was a very doom and gloomy speech that you're all used to hearing me say. But I also found there was a little nugget in there in that speech where I made fun of Donald Trump's hair. And now he's our president. So I guess some things do change. But there was also a line in that speech that was also very relevant to today's times and today's speech, which was that I said that sometimes it's by looking back that we become certain of what we must do and where we must go together. So today, in that same theme, I'd like to take my time to look a little bit behind us into what has happened in the past so that we can see clearly the path ahead of us. Because when I stood here in 2010 as a young man, the state's financial situation was challenging, to say the least. The budget was straining with red ink, the backlog of bills was $6 billion, and we had painful choices to make. Now, I had been sounding the alarm for many years about budget gimmicks and about overly rosy revenue projections, as well as efforts to mislead the public and the taxpayers about promising things that we couldn't afford. Sometimes my warnings worked, and sometimes they fell with a thud. Sometimes the state made progress, and sometimes we fell backward because of mistakes of our own doing. But even by Illinois standards, the past 4 years have taken an extraordinary toll. I'll be the first to say that this problem didn't happen only 4 years ago, that it's many years in the making, and it happened long before Governor Rauner's impasse. But the situation we find ourselves in today is an entirely different beast. And it will take years to dig out from the self-inflicted financial hole made worse by a two-year ideological war. The catalog of horribles is dire. A $3.2 billion structural deficit, even after raising taxes. A mountain of debt that totals nearly $15 billion. That's triple what it was before the impasse began. Late payment penalties due to the budget impasse exceeded $1.25 billion. 8 credit downgrades for the state and 5 universities fell to junk credit status. We now pay millions more in interest on our bonds because of those downgrades. Enough money to give another 25,000 students MAP grants every year. That's enough to provide scholarships to every student at SIU Carbondale and ISU combined. It's devastating, and it could have been avoided. Now, next week, our governor is going to give his budget address and lay out a blueprint to address these issues and others head on. And I'm proud to be working for Governor J.B. Pritzker and the great team that he has assembled. But today I want to talk to you about how Governor Pritzker's administration will address one of the issues, the most pressing financial issue, that has bedeviled generations of Illinois, our pensions. Today, the state of Illinois faces nearly $134 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. Now, let's start with this critical point. These are pensions that workers earned. Workers who served as teachers, as janitors, as nurses. These are pensions that were promised to them. And these workers have planned around and built their whole retirement plan depending on these pensions. But these pensions were never supposed to eat up 20% of our budget. As I said in my opening, sometimes you need to look back to find out the best path forward. The year was 1994, and our government leaders realized there was a problem. The state's pension systems were headed on a financial collision course with actuarial and mathematical reality. Experts were convened, plans devised, and it was decided the state would embark on a 50-year plan to pension solvency. This plan was well-intentioned, no doubt, and at first it seemed to work. The systems were 70% funded in 1997. But there were hidden flaws and anticipated hiccups. The flaws only became evident when the markets got shaky and we realized that people were going to be living longer. First, under this plan, the hard payments were backloaded. They would steadily increase, but the real pain was left for the out years. Then system assets dropped 10% during the dot-com crash and 31% during the Great Recession. Only then did we realize that the projected rates of return were unreasonably high. But the plan, the actuaries, and the markets were only partly responsible for our current dilemma. We also have to acknowledge the politically motivated poor judgments that led to pension holidays, early retirement initiatives, and skimming off the top of pension bonds. It all added up to this. The original architects of the 25-year-old plan calculated that in 2020, Illinois taxpayers would pay $4.9 billion in pensions. Instead, that same plan now calls for us to pay $9.1 billion. That's nearly double what was expected. In 1996, the state spent 3% of general fund's revenues on pensions. Today, the plan calls for us to spend 21% of our revenues on pensions. Now, let that sink in. 3%, 21%. That's the burden we are carrying. It's unsustainable, and frankly, it's not fair. It's not fair to parents who today need child care and students who deserve a good education. It's not fair to those who rely on social services or to providers who wait months to be paid for delivering them. Now, this state has tried to keep up with this 1995 ramp, and legislators have taken many difficult votes to do so. Votes to raise taxes, votes to cut benefits. And in that time, the Supreme Court has ruled that a pension is a promise, an unbreakable promise that we are legally required to pay. But it just seems that every time we try to reduce the pension-funded liability, we take two steps forward and three steps back. Remember, we were 70% funded in 1997. Yet for all the billions of taxpayer dollars we've put into the pension systems over the last 20 years, we're now 40% funded. That's 30 percent points lower than when we started. It's truly like the Greek myth Sisyphus pushing that pension boulder uphill, only to have it slip back down every time he makes progress. So whether it was a flawed structure of a pension ramp or the intervention of politicians who couldn't help but give away the store, our reality today is shaped by the fact that one out of every $5 in our budget goes to a pension. Despite all this bad news, there is a path forward. And it involves first being honest and transparent with ourselves and the taxpayers. That starts with the vital need to finally enact a fair income tax that will generate significant additional revenues for the state. A fair tax that 33 other states have already put in place. A fair tax that is the income tax structure for our federal government. A fair income tax that raises taxes on people like my boss and gives a tax break to the middle class. The fair income tax will change the arc of this state's finances in a positive way forever. It will take political will, but this governor and this administration is committed to doing the right thing. What we won't do is balance the budget on the backs of working families. They've paid that price for too long. We're proposing a way forward that acknowledges reality. The reality is that we must and we will pay the pensions that are owed. The reality is that a fair income tax can be enacted in less than 2 years. The reality is that no state can thrive when one out of every $5 goes to pensions. And the reality is that we cannot crowd out the investments we need to grow the economy and enhance our children's future. So let me offer some ideas and solutions to dig out of this. First, when the fair tax becomes law, we will create a new revenue source dedicated specifically to pensions. The state will commit to using $200 million a year directly to pensions over and above our legally required payment. This will not only help pay down the unfunded liability, but will also lower our cost of debt. Second, we must infuse cash and assets into the system now to improve the health of the funds. We will be evaluating some of the assets that the state owns, potentially worth billions of dollars, and look towards moving those into the pension system when appropriate. I'm pleased that experts like Jackie Avishia Guzman and Jamie Starr have signed on to help us with this effort and evaluation. These assets could be used in a way that is far more financially responsible for the state to increase assets in the pension system, to offset liabilities and reduce the unfunded liability overall. Third, let's listen to experts and exercise good financial management. We can lower the cost of our pension debt and inject cash immediately into the system by issuing a small-scale pension bond of about $2 billion. The bond proceeds would be used for no other purpose than to be deposited directly into the pension funds and would be used for paying down our unfunded liabilities. No skimming off the top to pay for this year's pension payment. No using pension bonds for operating costs. This protects taxpayers from the way these bonds were misused in the past, and it brings our pension funds closer to a healthy level. We would look to move forward on with this bond only if the calculation makes sense for taxpayers, if the interest rates are lower for the bond than what we are currently paying for the pension debt. It's simply good financial management. Fourth, the optional pension buyout programs passed last year were short-term in nature, which limits their effectiveness at reducing our future pension liabilities. We intend to extend these programs to provide certainty to retiring employees who may choose the option to retire and receive more upfront, and by doing so, expand the savings to the state overall. This is a responsible way to reduce liabilities without going back on the state's promise of retirement benefits. Finally, during last year's campaign, Governor Pritzker proposed smoothing and flattening payments into the pension system in the context of contributing more cash and assets into the system. We propose a modest extension of our pension amortization schedule by 7 years. We will still reach the target goal of 90% funding, but we will do so without massively crowding out investments our state needs to grow its economy. After almost a quarter century of losing ground, a 7-year extension is reasonable in the context of contributing billions to our pension systems. Collectively, these 5 actions will expand our tax revenue base, invest in priorities that grow our economy, and we'll be able to keep our pensions on a sustainable path that keeps our promises to retirees. Now, no discussion of pensions would be complete without recognition that we have a pension crisis brewing among our local and county governments. We must explore smart ways to consolidate these pension funds. The only applause line. That's I knew there was one. The state is home to 671 separate pension funds. This results in a fractured system that often duplicates functions across funds, limits the smaller funds to a narrow range of lower return investments, and impedes their ability to negotiate lower fees. These funds manage $170 billion in assets and have accrued liabilities totaling more than $355 billion, including the state funds. These liabilities have placed increased pressure on local governments and state and the state of Illinois, driving up property taxes and crowding out funding for local public initiatives. To begin consolidation efforts, Governor Pritzker created the Pension Consolidation Feasibility Task Force, which will be co-chaired by William Brodsky, the former chairman and CEO of the Chicago Board Options Exchange, who's here today, Pat Devaney, the president of the Associated Firefighters of Illinois, and Christine Redonio, the former Illinois Senate Minority Leader. No solution to Illinois' pension crisis will be easy. Every person knows this. If we're honest with ourselves, each choice will involve sacrifice, and each path includes pain. But what I do know is this. We can't be the state we want to become if we vacuum up more and more of our every precious tax dollars into pensions. We have to be able to invest in the things that will feed growth: strong schools, reliable infrastructure, a robust network of human services, effective public safety. But if we are willing to look back and understand our mistakes, we become certain of what we must do and where we must go together to be the state that we want to be and that I know we can become. Thank you.
Dan, thank you very much. Thank you. We have time for questions, ladies and gentlemen. So, if anybody, I see a hand up over here. And Amanda, our executive director, thank you very much. Anyone else? So we'll come around and we'll get that. Oh, I see some more questions out there. Okay. Okay, first question from City Club member Don Vincent. Don, where are you? Okay, Don's with the Daily Line, D-A-I-L-Y. Let's get that straight. Okay. How will you ensure that if you re-amortize the pension debt, we won't make credit rating agencies nervous? Or just kicking the can?
It's a great question, and it's the one that has been on our minds the entire time we were designing this plan. And I think it's a comprehensive plan and to a complex question. The rating agencies are closely looking at Illinois, no question about that. But I think they're going to look at the Pritzker administration with a new lens and I think some improved credibility. So first of all, I think they should and will give credit to the functionality that is going to be returning to state government. Part of the problem, I think, and it's been cited in some of the downgrades, is the lack of leadership or coordinated plan and cooperation in Springfield. That era is over. Governor Pritzker is committed to working with legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle, and he's shown that already. And so we're going to have a new functionality in Springfield that will help. Secondly, the governor has put himself out there very, very far and is going to put the full weight of his office behind a graduated income tax. That is going to be a massive infusion of revenues, and it's going to change the tax system forever, and it's going to lead to a tremendous amount of growth going forward. And that can't be discounted, and that will happen. Third, we are including in this plan an infusion of assets, because fixing the pension liability has to be about more than just putting billions in out of your operating revenues every year. Because as we've seen over the last 25 years, that's the two steps forward and three step back that happens. You have to move the needle with cash and asset infusion. And that's what we're going to do, and that's what the task force is about. Also, dedicating a portion of the graduated income tax, having a dedicated revenue stream, will be, I think, warmly received by the rating agencies. And that revenue stream will be, again, over and above what the actuarial required payment is going to be. And so if you take all those things together, I believe the rating agencies are going to say, quite honestly, they're going to say, let's see how this works. And I think they're going to find, especially after the graduated income tax becomes a reality, that this is a plan that works not just for 1 year, but for future generations.
Okay, thank you, Dan. God, we sure have a lot of questions here, I'll tell you that. This is from Sheila Weinberg, City Club member. Sheila, where are you?
Back there.
Back there, okay. She's with Truth in Accounting. It's not an oxymoron, by the way. Here's her question. Pension benefits must be paid with cash. How will you pay benefits with non-liquid assets?
So, Sheila, I remember you from 10 years ago as well. You used to write my office every year about the CAFR. So you're obviously up to the same old stuff, too. But I applaud you for your tenacity. You're on it, and we appreciate it. No, we're not going to pay benefits with assets. I mean, the assets will go in. They will lift up the funding ratio of the system. But obviously, we're still going to be putting billions of dollars in revenues from the income tax into the system, and those will be used. And employees will be putting millions and billions of dollars of their paycheck into the pension system, which will be used to pay benefits.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for keeping that question for 10 years. This is from City Club member Greg Fedorinchik. Greg, where are you? Right over there. Could you give us an example of a state asset that might be transferred
to help close the funding gap.
Don't say tollway, don't say tollway, don't say tollway. That's what Emily said. What the task force is going to do is do a full inventory of our assets. So, I mean, I joke about the tollway, but like that's what people are going to think, right? And you have the lottery. You know, any kind of cash or cash generating asset is a logical place to think of. But it's not that simple. I mean, those are actually complex because there are bonds attached to it, there are stakeholders. But then you can break it down into simpler things. Properties that the state owns, leases that we're in, which are not assets, but they could relieve some of the financial pressure we have. And so think about this. The state of Illinois in 2000 had 80,000 employees. Today we have 60,000 employees. So not only does that contribute to the whole unfunded problem because we have fewer employees paying into the pension system, but from a capacity and utilization of our properties standpoint, it begs the question, what are we doing with this excess space? Has it been looked at? Have we consolidated office space? Have we sold buildings of the state that we don't need? And that's what we're going to be looking at.
Okay, thank you. This question is from City Club member, Von Steuben High School graduate, Graham Grady. Graham, where are you? Graham's right over there. What are the areas of responsibility between the three deputy governors, Jesse Ruiz, my former state representative, Christian Mitchell, and yourself?
Four.
Yeah. Four. You gave me a bum question, Graham.
Yeah. Get your facts straight.
I went to Von Steuben. What can I say?
Simply put, so my title is Deputy Governor of Budget and Economy. So I'm working with the administration on crafting a budget and basically overseeing all the agencies that are related to the budget and economy, GOMBI, revenue, et cetera. Jesse Ruiz is Deputy Governor of Education and working on our education policy and the agencies that work on that. Christian Mitchell is Deputy Governor of Infrastructure, and so he will be working on the Capitol Bill, overseeing the Tollway Authority and IDOT and Capital Development Board and other things. And Sol Flores is Deputy Governor of Health and Human Services, so she will be working on our whole health and human service infrastructure and the agencies that support that.
Okay, great. This is from City Club member Abden Polish. Abden, where are you? There. Okay, great. It's an Abden question. The uninformed will react as they always do with, put everybody in 401ks. Could you explain why that will not work?
Is this Abden the reporter or Abden the state employee talking? Why it won't work? I mean, first of all, I mean, if you're talking prospective, the state of Illinois has a deferred compensation plan, so there's already a way to have both a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan. I mean, we can talk from a conceptual, philosophical standpoint about which is better. I personally believe the defined benefit plan is a great way of securing retirement savings. But we're not even going to entertain the idea of moving towards a 401k. What we need to do is fix the problem we have, which is a pension system that's underfunded.
Okay. This is from non-City Club member. See, we're an equal opportunity person up here. Mike Paulin with the North Shore Center for Performing Arts. Mike, where are you? Great. You guys do a great job out there, as do a lot of the other arts and cultural activities. Basically, he wants to know, what are the new administration's plans in respect to tourism funding, considering that it is revenue generated from visitors?
Well, I think this goes back to one of the comments I made about the bond rating agencies. I think having a cooperative and collegial relationship with the city of Chicago is going to help statewide tourism, so that we can work on a plan that basically taps into the gem that is the city of Chicago and the surrounding community, but then also brings to greater recognition the gems that we have throughout Illinois. So there are some great tourist sites throughout Illinois. And so we need to, frankly, borrow from the model of the city of Chicago in ways to bring global attention to these wonderful assets and tourist attractions downstate. And that's what we'll be doing.
Okay, thanks, Dan. This is from Bill Houston with Ellsworth & Associates. Came in through our internet. What programs could the governor cut that might save $100
million? $100
million.
I don't want to give an example of that, certainly a week before the budget address, but I would say that, you know, as a general matter, and this is worth bringing up to set expectations, you know, this government has been hollowed out over the last 4 years. We are in dire need of, and this is maybe a, you know, submit your resumes, but we are in dire need of fiscal officers, human resource directors. There's been, I believe, like benign neglect of state agencies over the last several years. And our social infrastructure is woefully underfunded, social service infrastructure. We're committed to funding education properly. So, you know, our process of getting to the budget for next week has been a process of saying no. I mean, we've had to say no a lot. But we don't have some axe out there just slashing and cutting, because that has happened over the last several years and it's caused great distress for our state.
Okay, good. Okay, we have time for a few more questions. This is from, you mentioned Loyola University. You know, there's several great universities in the city. This is from Nick Katrubowis. I butchered his name, but look at his handwriting. He's from DePaul University. Nick, where are you? Back there. Okay. If the state consolidates local municipal pensions, how will the contribution of municipalities to the fund be calculated? Based on the municipality's liability or the state's liabilities?
I was told there'd be no math.
It's like a PhD.
Yeah, right. No, and I don't want to get out ahead of the task force. Bill Brodsky's going to figure that out. He brought his calculator. No, I mean, it's a very complex issue. You have these 600-plus downstate police and fire pension funds, some in the, you know, millions of dollars, like single-digit million-dollar pension funds to hundreds of millions of dollar pension funds doing disparate things, not being able to consolidate their negotiating power together and invest in high-yielding assets or investments. In terms of the calculating how the money gets into the funds, I actually probably think that's probably the simplest part, is just, you know, knowing which locality has which liability and making sure that goes now maybe to a central place for investment purposes.
Okay. This is from James Harmoning, who's with Computer Bits, Inc. By the way, his daughter, Loyola graduate, law school, just passed the bar. Jim, where are you? Okay. Here's his question. I have read in media reports that a rainy day fund is being contemplated. Could you give us a little history on it and why this might be a good policy to have? That was your baby.
That was my baby. Yes, the history of the rainy day fund. We got it passed, we had it funded, and then like a week later it was gone. But it still exists. There is in the books and in the state funds the budget stabilization fund that has, I'm not kidding, I think it has like $8,000 in it. It's like, because it's like a bank. If it had zero, they'd have to close it down. So they put just enough in there to keep it open. Yeah, I mean, I do think that committing to the rainy day fund is going to be part of our plan. $200 million off the top of the graduate income tax is going to go into the pension system, and we're targeting $100 million for the rainy day fund. Now, understand it's difficult to put money into a reserve fund when you have $8 billion of bills you aren't paying. But I still think it's an important mechanism to put in place so that there's an automatic, so that you automatically pull $100 million out of the spending machine, put it into a reserve fund, even if you have to use it that year for paying backlog bills, because at least it'll build up as reserves in future years. And then when we get into the black, it will build up a reserve to cushion against recessions. So, yeah, that will be a part of what we're proposing.
Great. St. Ignatius High School, right? Are you ready to handle a question from another St. Ignatius grad? This is the famous Lawrence Massal right here with the Civic Federation. He's setting you up, Dan. Thank you for your return to state service. Here's his question. Are all the pieces of the puzzle required before the state will try to borrow for the pension contribution, or will you borrow first and then try and get other reforms? If we borrow first, won't our costs and the state credit rating be negatively impacted? St. Ignatius.
Yep. I mean, the timing of it, you know, has to be coordinated with other bond issuances we're doing, number one. I agree with you that it has to be synchronized in a way that it's not done, you know, before the rating agencies and everybody understand the full picture of what's going to be passed. And so, because I think that's part of creating that level of comfort. But as I mentioned, we're only going to issue the bonds if it makes financial sense, if the interest rate we're going to get is lower than the debt we currently pay on the pension liability. But you raise a very good point that we have to be sensitive to the timing of it, and so we'll make sure that, you know, it fits into the, you know, the passage of the budget and what the story coming out of that is, to make sure the rating agencies understand, you know, where we're heading.
Okay, thank you. This is from, I believe it's Mr. Houston, City Club member. Any comments about future utility legislation?
No, not really. No, that's not really on the agenda for today. But we will be, you know, working with the ICC on that and the legislative body.
Okay. That's why they have four deputy governors, right? Okay, so when we get another one of the deputies up here, maybe you'll ask that question again. This is from Jim Mullaney. I think he's with the Illinois Police Association or something. How come there are no police representatives on the Consolidation Commission?
There will be, Jim. I know Jim, and he's made great service to the police pension fund over the years. Yeah, there will be representation. We were just making sure that we didn't right out of the gates have, you know, 16 people, but it will be it's a committee in formation, and there'll be all the stakeholders will be represented. No question.
Okay, we just have a few questions left. This is from Brian Gustafson. Brian, where are you? Well, back there in the Bob Uecker seats. Okay. What's your view on sports gambling? Will it be both on ground and online?
So sports gambling is a major priority for this administration for one reason in particular. You know, we've all seen over the years the gaming bills come and go, and the same story happens that it becomes overloaded with different regional disputes and then it dies. What's different here is that sports betting, revenue from sports betting, is found money. This is not cannibalizing from another boat. This isn't sharing the wealth from different regional areas. This is money we're losing every day we don't pass this legislation. So we need to be the first to do so in the Midwest.
Okay, we just have a few questions left. This is from Julie Hobart. Julie, are you with us? Back there. Okay. Her question is, are you considering, or is the governor and the team considering, a capital gains tax and an estate tax?
Neither of those are things that we're considering right now. There, I mean, there already is an estate tax in Illinois. Those are not things we're considering.
Okay. Dave Lundy from Aileron. I think Dave's over here. There he is. What percentage do you expect we'll be at when all of the pension initiatives might be in place?
I'm sorry.
What percentage do you expect, I think, Illinois will be at when all of the pension initiatives are in place?
Oh. Well, I mean, the unfunded liability is not going to, you know, see a major change in year one. This is a long-term plan. When we bring in assets on the front end, that should have, you know, an impact on the funded liability. It can't really be calculated for like year one. I think what we want to do is understand that the ramp has been in 25 years. We've gone backwards, extending it out, infusing capital, making sure that we're responsible going forward, and dedicating revenues to it. I think over the long term will reduce and eventually bring us to a 90% funded level.
Okay. Two last questions. As Chair, I'll ask them. I just heard this morning about 11 o'clock that Amazon announced that they're withdrawing their plans to go into New York City and Long Island. Do you think this will be something that the governor, the state, will revisit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We believe Illinois is the right place for Amazon to go. We've always believed that. And I think going back to, again, that theme of coordination and functionality that has returned to Illinois, the governor's office will be working very closely and strategically with the mayor's office and the business community, labor community, all those that stand to benefit from this, and we'll be doing that immediately.
Okay, and the very, very last question, Deputy Governor, deals with the governor's giving his top employees additional resource, e.g. compensation, in addition to whatever the salary level is. And there have been some critics saying that that puts you in a position of not representing the citizens of Illinois, but of being the hired hands of the governor. I'm sure you've been asked this many times. How do you respond to that question?
Yeah, I've heard that. So first of all, I think it's been looked at legally, and there's no issue there. But I think more, if you look at the people who are involved with the governor, with Governor Pritzker's administration, Jesse Ruiz, Sol Flores, Christian Mitchell, myself, and many, many others, go down the line one after another, and you will find that these are all people who are committed to government and public service. We're doing this because we believe in the governor, and we believe our state needs people to step up, and that's what we're doing.
Great. Let's everybody give Deputy Governor Dan Hines a big round of applause.